and welcome to episode 55 of the Card Hoarder Podcast, your weekly source for Magic Online news, community, and finance. You can find the show every week on iTunes, MTG Cast, and of course on our home site, cardhoarder.com, where you can check out other content like Magic Online guides and Team Card Hoarder articles. Check out cardhoarder.com for buying and selling Magic Online singles with round-the-clock customer service. My name is Connor. I'm the host and editor for the podcast, joined as I am always by my two co-hosts. First up, Nathaniel. Hello.
Hey, Connor. How are you doing?
Not too bad. So, weekend jam-packed, taking care of the family dog.
Nice.
It's been an eventful weekend, also trying to watch the Pro Tour as much as I can, but I'm ready to talk some Magic this weekend. I don't know about you.
Ah, for sure. There's lots to talk about, as always.
Excellent. So also joining me from Ireland, my other co-host, Dave C. Hello, Dave.
Hey, Connor.
So on this episode, we're going to go over Pro Tour Amonkhet, how releasing new sets on Magic Online week one has affected the Pro Tour, and we'll even talk about our biggest punts in our Magic history as well. But first, got to give props to my boy, Jerry Thompson, winning Pro Tour Amonkhet with Mono Black Zombies of all decks. So this is a new feeling for me. Like, I've had some friends win some big tournaments in the past, but not a Pro Tour, so this is new uncharted territory. I don't know how to feel anymore, but I actually did watch most of the top eight this time around, unlike past, like, five or six Pro Tours. Like, Pro Tours have been just kind of meh for me. But this one, I had some stakes in it, and I don't think I was alone here. I mean, Jerry Thompson, huge pillar of the community, and it really showed. A lot of people posting their congrats and just thankful that Jerry T is just a part of the community and just an awesome guy all around. And like, I couldn't also like be more thankful for just having him around in this community as well. And when I got back into Magic, he was a huge part of it. He was the pillar of the Star City circuit. So he's just always been a huge part of the Magic community and just kind of like a good role model for myself as well. And also, I work with him as well. So, I mean, it's going to be a fun podcast to edit him talking about his winning Pro Tour. So, I mean, guys, you guys haven't won a Pro Tour. Come on. Get with the program.
It's only because I haven't actually qualified for the Pro Tour. I feel like if I could just reach that, you know.
Lies. You said you've qualified before.
Oh, you're right. I did play. That was a long, long time ago. One thing that struck me, it gives you the feels when you're reading your Reddit thread. I mean, he is super well-liked. And I don't think I've seen the community as positive about something just universally as him winning. And just like so many huge pros saying how happy they were for him and how much they like him and appreciate him in the community. Kind of what you're saying, Connor. I clearly had no idea he was... He had marked so many lives in the industry. So that was a nice surprise to see and to experience with his win.
It helps that we have an established star win. It helps, too, that he faced one of the top Japanese pros in Yuya Watanabe as well. That was a great finals. Almost a classic. I mean, the finals wasn't too exciting, but that's another story that we'll talk about how awesome Standard is or how medium it is, I should say. But it's almost as if Star City Games is good at building new stars. Imagine that.
I wouldn't call him a new star, but
yeah. Yes. But I mean, Jerry wasn't really a well-known pro, but he really made his name on the SCG Tour back in those days. It was SCG Open Series, if you will. I mean, he really got his popularity by winning a ton of opens in a row with Callblade and things like that. That's really where he became popular because he's been a long-time Pro Tour regular, but this is his second Pro Tour top eight. And the other one coming in Pro Tour Gate Crash, which was a loaded top eight as well. But, I mean, that came, what, 2013 or something like that, or 2014? So it was a long time coming for him.
Yeah, for a long time, he was considered one of the better players. I think coverage tried to hammer this home up. He was considered one of the better players without a top eight. It's always cool to ask those questions, you know, find best player without a top eight, best player that have never won a Pro Tour, best player to have never won a GP and stuff. And he was certainly on that list for a long time. I do like your point that we got a lot of views in this Pro Tour, and they definitely spiked during the top eight. And Jerry is a built character in the community. It's a bit like watching a sitcom and watching, I think, the child actor from the sitcom grow up through the years of watching it. It is kind of what happened with Jerry. Jerry's been in the limelight of the game for a very long time. He hasn't always been a top pro, but while he wasn't, you know, dominating the Pro Tour, he was dominating the SCG. While he wasn't doing that, he was vocal and talking about wanting to work in Wizards and going off on a bit of hiatus, but we knew he was working for the company, so he was never out of touch, and we've just known him. It's when you read so much about these people and you hear so much about them, it's like you know them for a very long time. And Jerry's been around since, I think, before I start playing. I've never known Magic without Jerry T doing content of some sort. So I think that's one of the reasons he's got such a big response, besides by all accounts, being a stand-up guy. Just interesting to see someone that's put so much time and effort into the game get rewarded, and I think that makes people feel good. It makes people feel good about the time and effort they also put into the game.
His articles and all his content, he's always honest with himself, and he's always very outgoing. He always shares, hey, this is the deck I'm playing. I don't care. You know what I'm playing? Whatever. That doesn't matter. I'm just going to beat you anyways. And I love how somebody on Twitter brought up his old SCG article way back when. It's titled, Why I Suck at Pro Tours. I actually remember reading this article originally when it came out. It's a great read that's actually still relevant today, even though it's 5 years old from now. Best quote from the article I found, you give me a metagame and I'll crush it. I think someone like Sam Black is much better at getting reads on those metagames and putting together a shell of something that will crush it. Having me with Sam is a dangerous combination because we have best of both worlds, and given day, we're going to have a shell and then fine-tune it. However, I don't have anyone close to Sam Black's skill set. Instead, I'm left to my own devices. So fast forward to 2017. Jerry is on Team Mutiny with Sam Black and wins a Pro Tour. Just imagine that. Like, that's just sick.
That's also very interesting that he wrote that in the article, because we're going to talk about this a little later. This might have been the most predictable metagame of all time because of a little bit of help. And I'm not taking anything away from Jerry, but maybe this Pro Tour was right in his wheelhouse. He knew what people were going to play. He knew what he was going to play. He knew how he was going
to
beat them.
Yeah, and he had Sam to fine-tune that Zombies deck for him, so it was perfect.
Exactly.
But I'll leave the article in the show notes if you want to learn more about the Pro Tour metagaming process, because it's always been an interesting topic for me. They talk about it on the Game Podcast a ton, and just deck selection, it's so important, and how far you want to level yourself in front of the field as well. It's such a complicated process that if you really want to achieve Pro Tour success, like, that's where the decision-making is really important of deck selection. Jerry kind of goes into it in that article, kind of talks about his personal life as well. It's kind of funny. He references Josh Cho, and Josh Cho is also on Team Mutiny, so it's kind of funny how, like, history kind of repeats itself in some ways and kind of how it just comes about. So moving on to actual decks, though. So top 8 decks, 3 Zombies decks, 4 Aetherworks Marvel, and a lone green-black energy deck. So no Mardu decks in the top 8, no Gideon, no Heart of Kirin. We were afraid that Cut to Ribbons might have put the deck over the top, although I don't think this is the last we're going to see Mardu going forth, I don't think.
No, it's a really interesting top 8. No Mardu, though I think Wizards were delighted by that, because if there was, they could have been some real turbo.
Yeah, they were. I think it was Aaron Forsythe boasting about no Gideons in the top 8.
There was 8 Gideons in the top 8, right? They're in, like, the sideboards of one of the decks.
Or at least, maybe it was, there's more Chandra Flame colors in the top 8 than Gideon's.
Yeah, no, it's certainly a bit more balanced. There's a lot of fears coming out of this top 8, though. So we talked about it. I talked about it on this cast. I've talked about it on my stream, how Marvel is just going to take Cat's place. They're very similar decks. Marvel is not half as strong as Cat combo was. That was so resilient and so strong. But it's still a combo deck that stops mid-range decks from being a thing. And that's really what we saw at this tournament. I think a lot of Mardu players were being too mid-range. The last Mardu deck we saw was very mid-range, and even, like, sideboarded into this Planeswalker control deck, and that's not how you're going to beat Marvel. Zombies, on the other hand, is super low to the ground and puts a lot of pressure on. Also, while being traditionally weak to sweepers, yes, you need sweepers to beat zombies, but they can come back from a sweeper. I think it was way more suited to play against Marvel. Saying that, a lot of the good players think that Marvel's still really advantaged against zombies. And that is the scary thing, as I said. That is the scary thing coming out of this. We have 3 different decks in the top 8. We have one of them I think is a super outlier. The energy deck I don't think is actually better than any of the other decks we saw do well. I think just a very good player piloted it. We have zombies, which I don't think is very good against Marvel. And we have Marvel variants. So we could be looking at, as we feared before, a 1 deck metagame, but a lot of people are worried about Mardu being that one deck, and it might very well be the Marvel deck that ends up dominating the format. We're going to see in the upcoming weeks. But another interesting thing about that is the Zombies deck that Jerry T played. If someone pointed out on Twitter, if you look at a Reed Duke article from really early in the spoilers, or right at the end of the spoilers maybe, he has basically this list bar, I think only 6 or 7 cards changing it, and they're mostly sideboard cards. That's how linear the zombie deck is. You can't change much from it. It's not that the guys didn't try and innovate and just grab the deck at random. It's that the main deck is pretty much set in stone. There's only 1 or 2 differences you can make, and 1 or 2 differences you can make to the sideboard, and they're mainly metagame calls. Where Marvel and Mardu and a couple other decks in the format, they can adapt, they can change, they can run a bunch more sweepers. We saw Chandra Flamecaller making a massive comeback and being a sweeper on the top end of Marvel decks, and most of them will probably have now some number of that combat zombies. And zombies is a deck that's going to stay stagnant while all these other decks move on. So while it had a really good showing, it won the Pro Tour, I wouldn't be surprised in a few weeks if the metagame had completely moved on from it.
Yeah, it seems like, Dave, your prediction regarding Marvel is true. Zombies won, which is super exciting. I love that a tribal deck won. I think that your analysis that it's not really changeable, you know, kind of is what it is, and thus could be planned for. I still think it's a great deck, but I think it'll just be easily sort of pushed out of the metagame as a result. So, I mean, it'll be interesting to see if there's another deck that can rival Marvel. I mean, I guess if you can build a deck that beats Marvel, then you're probably in pretty good shape, depending on how your matchup with zombies is. But yeah, I mean, I suspect that's kind of where the metagame's going to go. I think it is kind of, you're right that WotC was happy that Mardu wasn't, you know, because Mardu was the next best deck, right? But Dave had pointed out that Marvel is actually likely to be the kind of thing just sitting there, you know, saying, well, you know, you have banned a lot of stuff, but it's still here, and now it's going to be dominant. So I suspect that that's where we're going to be, and I feel like that is how we've kind of left many of the Pro Tours, right, is not necessarily the winning deck being the best deck.
Yeah, the control mirror match from, was it two Pro Tours ago?
Kaladesh, yeah.
Yeah, neither of those decks were good.
just which is weird, because that was my prediction, and I could not have been more wrong from deck selection side. You know, we ended up not seeing any control decks in the top eight.
Yeah.
Although a few of the like Marvel decks kind of facilitated like as control decks in the top eight. Like I think Martin Mueller's version was the one with the four Chandras in the main, and that's the Oath of the Gatewatch Chandra, because there was another one that played the Torch of Defiance. I think that was Mark DeBias's. So there's a few different flavors of Marvel. I know there was like a Sultai version of Marvel, but this kind of sounds like what you said, Dave. It's just kind of sounding like the cat deck. So they just play, some of them play four colors, some play these colors, and
yeah.
Well, and there's whiffing, and there's a lot more risk. It's not a guaranteed combo sort of thing too. So,
well, this is the problem with the metagame. When stuff boils down to, why doesn't your deck just have Marvel? You need an excuse for your deck not to be running this combo. Because even when they do whiff, and I hated watching some of the coverage in the Marvel mirrors, watching players that are 10 times better than me. I want to watch the intricacies of the game, and they're literally just flipping coins at each other. They might as well be playing, finger football across each other on a desk for all that the skill involved.
Finger football takes an incredible amount of skill.
Yeah, that was a huge game in high school, lunch tables.
Yeah, it's a great game.
So all your mid-range decks aren't green-black, they're not Ashkana decks, they're Marvel with creatures and planeswalkers. All your control decks are the Yuya decks, Marvel with spells. So Marvel is so easy to shoehorn into a deck, you can just play any shell around it to fit the metagame. I was discussing with a friend, a guy I know called Craig, he's been on the Pro Tour before, he loves Teemer Terror. And he thought, you know, Teemer Terror was this tier 2 deck that did well at some tournaments, maybe that would step up. And a lot of other people apparently were testing it, like, why wouldn't this deck just get tons better? And the answer is because Terror was very good against Cat, but it's not very good against Marvel. And if you're going to play a Teemer control deck, why not just make your Terrors into Aetherworks Marvels and Ulamogs instead? You're playing the exact same shell. Like, you would just be playing Yuya's shell, except with Teemer Terrors and some different win conditions instead of Ulamogs. That shows how warping the card is already, that there are two fundamental archetypes that are just better if you put Aetherworks Marvel in them instead of normal cards. And I don't think that's great moving forward. I think that's stifling for building. But before people get panicked and think this will get banned, I've been saying this to people, it's only around for 6 months, I think, until Ulamog rotates. So while...
Is it only 6 months? Ah, that's nothing.
Well, it should have been rotated out if we were staying with the two rotations, but whatever, you know.
I don't think that's a short amount of time either, Connor. Sorry, Nathaniel, but I think they will sit on it and go, you know, this isn't too bad. There's lots of different varieties of Marvel. The top eight was varied. Hey, look at this new deck that came out, Zombies. Please pay attention to Zombies, where we might actually have a problem. They might try and wait out. On top of that, Ulamog only goes out, but the energy core stays together for a long while. And Brad Nelson has pointed out in a video of his a while ago that all the energy cards just seem a little bit too good. They all probably make one more energy than they should, or acquire one less energy than they should to activate. And that it might just be a problem in the consistent future We'll see. I'm not sick of it yet. It was still fun to watch the Pro Tour, as random as it was. There was a lot of really good games. But I can imagine after a couple GPs of this, I might not be watching the coverage.
We'll see. As Nathaniel said, I think another reason why viewership is so large and why Nathaniel enjoyed it, because people do like tribal decks, they like zombie decks. So I think I'm going to give Jerry most of the credit, but I'll give a little nod to zombies kind of winning. I mean, that helped me watch the finals a little bit more. If it was a Marvel mirror at the end, I'm not watching that. I don't care who's playing. Well, I'm not watching it.
Speaking of people wanting to watch an individual, Christian Calcano finally breaking a top 8.
Yeah, that was another great story.
Huh? Yeah, his emotional speech was perfect. You know, someone just letting their emotions out about this. I remember when I was young, you used to think that people were cooler when they said they didn't care if they did well at Magic. And you're seeing someone like pour their heart and soul out about how much it meant to them and finally getting to the spot which a lot of people thought he deserved. You know, he's a massive fan favorite. There was Yuya is always a massive fan favorite. And as much as I thought Jerry deserved it, I would not begrudge Yuya a Pro Tour win. The guy is maybe top 5 player of all time. The guy is absolutely insane. So stacked top 8. As you said as well, Jerry only seems to top 8 stacked Pro Tours as well. Stacked Pro Tour.
Yeah, I looked up Pro Tour Gatecrash, which I'm going to reference a little bit later on. But I mean, that's a well-known PT, obviously, because Melissa DeTora, she was the first female to top 8. But that was Joel Larson's first big top 8. He was in the finals against Tom Martel. Let's see, Steven Mann, Owen Turtenwald. Stack top 8. And Dave, of course you're going to be cheering for Yuya because you are on Team Musashi, who crushed it again this weekend. So
they're geniuses.
So Nathaniel, I actually wanted to hear about your team, not to be daggerish about you, but I just didn't hear much about what... I know it wasn't a great performance, obviously. How many players day two'd from Team Card Order? Or did any day two? I just don't know. I'm sorry.
Yeah, two of them day two. So we had half the team day two. It was Noah, I think, was 4-4 after day one. Jack Kiefer was 5-3. He was 5-1 at one point. I'm sure a disappointing kind of end of day one run there. Yeah, I mean, it seemed like, for the most part, I mean, I think Joe did okay in draft, but I think that the draft was pretty rough. And Noah went 0-3 in the draft and then came back to 4-4. So good for him. But, you know, we had a couple players and Joe and Noah, you know, looking to get up to gold. And, you know, I know they were disappointed with their performance because I don't think it really brought them any closer to where they already were in terms of getting gold. So, yeah, I mean, I think mostly a disappointment from their eyes. And I forget what I think it might have been on last week's cast where it was like, you know, it's kind of an honor to get there. And at least for kind of this year's Pro Tours, you know, our goal was to kind of get as many people as we could. And, you know, of course, we wish we had more than 4 at the event, but, you know, it was still fun. And Jennifer went and did coverage, which was great to kind of keep an eye on as well. Hopefully we'll be able to put 4 or more players into Kyoto and then, you know, reevaluate things and see what our goals should be for next year.
Well, Nathaniel, it takes time.
Yeah.
All your players should read Jerry's article because who knows? I mean, how long has he been on the tour? 15 years? That's just a guesstimate. So
yeah.
It takes time, man.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I'm willing to, you know, acknowledge the fact that it's not an instant, you know, nothing can be an instant success. You know, I want to root for the team. I want to come out with a surprise and just...
Yeah,
you know, that's the dream. Is like, you know, someone from Team Card Order won the tournament or top 8 it, like it would kind of blow everybody away, which would be pretty sweet.
Yeah, Jerry, that's what he said in his article too. Not everybody's Josh Cho who makes top 4 of their first Pro Tour. So just, yeah, you know, we're not all Josh Cho there. With the but Dave, did you want to say anything else about teams during the tournament? I know you said you wanted to comment something about it.
Yeah, so teams was really weird. I didn't get to watch too much of the coverage day one, but from what I saw, teams made day one coverage really awkward because they had like a graphic to like hear all the people that came back, and once you get past the top tier teams, you can see that just not many people, how hard it is to qualify for the Pro Tour. And you know, I'm not saying they should sugarcoat that. It's just you're setting it up as a competition, team competition. And when you, in reality, you know there's only actually maybe 6-7 teams ever able to get into the top 4, maybe a little bit more, maybe let's say 10. To be generous, teams that can make it in there. That's kind of off-putting. One of the top teams, MTG Mint Card, I think, doesn't even have all its members qualified. Them being in the top 4 going into the last tournament will get their last member qualified. So that made day one coverage really awkward. In fact, the guy I was talking about, Craig, his team, because he qualified for one tour and then they all fell off was put up on the graphic in X place, and none of them were qualified. Why even put them up on the graphic? It doesn't make any sense. It looks depressing. At the start of the tournament, the team in like third or fourth place was the guy that won the last Pro Tour. What's his name? Is it Lewis Esper?
Bertold.
Yeah, he was the only person on his team to re-qualify. So he himself was occupying fifth or sixth place or something like that. I can't remember the exact details. But he was like the only person to re-qualify on his team. And it looks weird.
Yeah, it sort of just underscores how is it set up the way, you know, it should be. And to be fair, it's a trial run or whatever they called it. But I'm sure it's embarrassing for the people that are up there. They're not, you know, they're not qualified. And you got teams like us where, you know, half the team's not there. So, I mean, it clearly needs to be re-looked at. And I think there's a lot of improvement that could happen with the team series. But, you know that Watsy's going to make changes for next year. So, yeah. At least there's that. But
Watsy making changes with the game? No. No.
Saying that, I don't think it's a negative thing. I think the ambition for it is there. Day 2 and day 3, I think it was really interesting to see the movement of the top teams. But therein lies the conundrum, the top teams. And maybe we should be looking at something we talked about, a substitute system. I was thinking, is there any way to abuse this system if a player falls off a team? So say Card Hoarder, a couple of the guys didn't really qualify. You should have been able to, I think, put Jack on the team and take someone else off the roster, and they're not able to come off the roster again if they've been off. They can go on to another team maybe, but they can't rejoin the same team. So there isn't just swapping rosters to boost points.
There is some sort of mechanism to change your team. I don't think it's allowed because you don't have, because, you know, people didn't qualify, and it can't be somebody that's already on another team, that sort of thing. I mean, and you can understand why. There's lots of potential abuse, or like they want to have a team there that people can root for. But of course, the way the Pro Tour is set up, like you said, I mean, there's only so many Platinum, you know, there's only so many Hall of Famers and Platinum Pros and Gold Pros that are qualified for every Pro Tour, you know, for the year. And the way it's set up now, if you don't have six of those people qualified for every Pro Tour, then you are not, or you are extremely unlikely to be in it, in this race, even though there's no downside to entering the race, per se. Or I don't think that is what a successful team aspect of this Pro Tour would be. And, you know, I don't know what the right answers are. And I know they're very, very reluctant to offer additional slots at the Pro Tours and stuff like that. But, you know, if you're on a team, like, you should be able to be playing in the Pro Tours for that team, in my opinion. And so that means either, you know, the teams are qualified so that they can play in all four events, or, you know, you change the way the team works and it's just team by Pro Tour only, and you can change your team every Pro Tour. I don't think that accomplishes exactly what Watsy wants to do, but it makes a lot more sense than this approach that we have now. So, I mean, I'll be interested to see. I'm sure they see, or at least some of the downsides of this approach, and hopefully we'll see a revision of what it is, you know, when they officially launch, you know, this team sort of series for the Pro Tour.
What? Yeah, revisions are definitely coming. I'm interested to see it. Obviously, there's been some downsides. The hype just wasn't quite there as it was at the previous Pro Tour. Yeah. Dave, do you want to give your closing thoughts on it too?
I just wanted to pitch a quick thing to Nathaniel, see what he thinks of this. For the teams, if you would change it that only, let's say, two Platinum Pros and one Hall of Famer are allowed on the same team. So you would be required, maybe you can even put a cap on gold. It's like two Plats, two gold. And like the Hall of Famer takes a gold slot if they want. And then they'd be required to find like silvers, maybe. Maybe it would mess up a bit too much over the season with people upgrading through
silver. Yeah, I mean, I don't think that accomplishes what they want. I think they like the super teams with the crazy six names on it that kind of blow people's mind and get people interested in that thing, in that team race. But if you want to have the teams, then they need to be qualified for the events. Like, I mean, just imagine like I understand this is an individual sort of game, and so it's more difficult than like the other esports, but you know, if you have a team that qualifies and then that team's playing with three people instead of six, or you know what I mean, like it just doesn't make any sense for what they're trying to accomplish. So I think ultimately the best thing that in my mind, at least, teams have qualifications for the Pro Tour. Whether or not that, you know, means that you change how the Pro Tour is structured and make it less about individuals and more about teams, or if the team thing is separate, perhaps, or you know it's not a whole season. It's just literally one Pro Tour, and then Team Card Order can have a team, and you know everybody can have a team as long as you know if you got six players qualified and they're on the team, they're wearing the jersey. But you know, I think you have too much shifting then at that point. You know, so yeah. I don't have the exact answer. Knowing that WASI doesn't want to automatically invite an extra, you know, 50 or 100 people to every Pro Tour for the year, you know what I mean?
Yeah, I think my closing thought is that I'm excited to see them. I think there's the seeds of something good there, and I think day two in the top eight showed that teams can be exciting and people root for teams. I just think they have to think of it. I think they got a brand stuff. Was an example used like Dota in the game? You can buy team banners. 25% of the proceeds go to the team. 25% goes to a pot to help the World Championships at the end of the year, so they can have bigger prizes at the end of the year, and then the rest of it goes to the company. But that'd be really clever for Modo, and that's branding that you could get in. You can make your prize pots bigger, you can make your teams more relevant. I think they need to think about stuff like that. I think there's definitely the seeds of something great there.
And I know Connor wants to move on, but as you were saying that, I was thinking about Magic Online. And, you know, what if they ran, like, a weekly event where you kind of choose a team to root for, and then that team receives some proceeds from the entry fees? Or, you know what I mean? Like, I don't want to say, like, a fundraiser for the teams, but, you know, but some way to, you know, even if, like, if WOTC charged, like, an extra ticket, and then that ticket went to the team that you're, you know, playing or supporting or whatever. I mean, there's lots of ways to integrate Magic Online. I think that would be really good.
Maybe even cheer for a certain team in the Team Draft Super League.
Yeah, and you could even reward players. I know, like, someone gave the example when this came up on Twitter is, okay, so every Pro Tour, you have, like Nathaniel's saying, like, drafts and stuff, and you can cheer for teams. You can choose what team you're supporting that week on Modo. And if you choose whatever team does the best, everyone's account gets a booster pack. You know, that's fine. A booster pack.
Yeah, I was trying to get the team some money. We want to get the pros enough money so that they can do this for a living. I think that's where the sweet spot is. Because you see, you know, when they're doing the coverage, and you know, you have some teams like, well, you know, we all have jobs, so we didn't really get to prepare for this because this isn't our job. It's like, I totally understand it, but you know, I think WOTC should be working very hard to have that not be the case. They should be working very hard to kind of set up the foundation and structure to make it so that their top pros are making livable wages, not entirely based on their performance in four events in the year.
Anyway. Let's hope the team series is kind of a first step in that process.
Indeed.
As far as innovating new things and preparing for the Pro Tour and tournaments, so let's talk about Magic Online here a little bit. So as we mentioned, there's really no kind of breakout cards, no breakout deck really from the Pro Tour. But as PV said, there's a lot of subtle innovations, and that kind of transitioned us into the Magic Online affecting the Pro Tour more than ever now. Paulo Vita Damarosa, he had a vlog on Channel Fireball, which titled What They Did Wrong in Preparing for Pro Tour Amaket. So he says CFB Ice, they spent more time on tuning, or they should have spent more time tuning and finding better sideboard options or main deck innovations to already established Magic Online decks. They spent too much time trying to, like, break the format and things like that. I also want to cite another article by Mike Segrist, which was a few weeks before this, actually, entitled Pro Tour is Changing. And it actually came to, like, the same conclusion as Paulo, that the Pro Tour is basically no longer for innovating. So sets being released on Magic Online, it's changed the game now. So one can argue that Wizards has maybe more influence over this by crafting more diverse and unique standard sets. I think PV makes a great point in his video that I agree with a lot, that most of the current standard decks are now just pre-built. I guess that kind of counteracts your argument, Nathaniel, a little bit of, like, there's too many push cards, but I think this is more the problem with standard. Like, zombies is just, like, you jam the best zombies into a deck. As Dave said, like, it was just, like, a random deck that Reed had in his article, like, was it, like, pre-week one or whatever? I'm not even sure. But
yeah, it was so long, yeah, like, if,
isn't that the definition of push cards, though? I mean, if zombies is one of the most powerful decks, then it's pushing a deck even, as opposed to,
but like, the individual cards, is one card really that pushed? Is it tuned with Aether a busted card? Is World of Virtuoso a busted card?
No, but you can maybe call it a busted mechanic. I do understand what he's saying, and it's kind of like they're holding your hand. It's no longer you right. have to find nuances. It's, hey, energy's a thing. Is there some cool interaction with older cards? No, stop being an idiot. Just put all the cards that say energy in the deck.
And, yeah, and it's easy to choose which ones. Like, Harness Lightning seems good. Yeah, it's good for the deck. Yeah, all right, easy.
Probably want to throw some Aether Hubs in there in every deck ever for the rest of time.
Yeah.
It's more about the innovation. Because, I mean, really, because the articles we're talking about, you know, innovation, and Paolo wanted to find the deck, find the Cobblade or whatever, right? And it's like, well, they don't really exist because there's nothing like kind of lurking under the surface that only the greatest minds of Magic can find. And the combinations of cards that you're supposed to be, quote unquote, supposed to be trying out are kind of known quantities. It feels like. It's certainly more than before in my mind.
Well, I think it's a little bit of both. I think it's partially Wizards how they're crafting sets now, but I think I think Magic Online has a huge role in this.
I do think it's a little overstated. I do get his point. I think this argument comes along really often and is just forgotten about a year or two after it's made when a new creative deck comes around. But if you look back in history, yeah, if you go super far back, everything had to be innovated because they had no idea how to put together a set. A set was just random cards that had some similar teams. When I started playing Magic, every Pro Tour had an obvious deck. Do you think Affinity wasn't obvious? Super obvious. It's just cheap artifacts. You know what's good with cheap artifacts? Cranial Plating. You know what's good with cheap artifacts? Ravager.
Dave, I see your point, but PV's argument as well, or I think, I can't remember if it was Mike Segrist's argument as well, that the Eldrazi deck, now most, like some teams did know about this deck and played it, but a lot of teams cited that, or I should say, one or two, maybe these two articles or video stated that, yeah, we should have played the Eldrazi deck, but we just didn't have time because it just wasn't out early enough on Magic Online. But now, with this, if this same system was in place for that Pro Tour, the Pro Tour would have been flooded with Eldrazi decks.
Yeah, I think the online does have a very fast way of finding decks. I think this set is a bad one to completely judge it on.
Yeah, because, no, I completely agree with that.
Yeah, because there's an inherently broken card we knew was broken a while ago when it interacted with Emrakul, and there was a pretty obvious Zombies deck. As I said, you can't change it. It's very obvious what the good cards are in the Zombie deck. I played it a couple times and immediately knew that, like, the Belcher, whatever its name is, the 3-mana guy, he's not good enough. The other cards need to be there. So I do agree with PB. The big part of it is information. I don't think people innovated as much. I think what they're calling innovations are a stretch. I think Cobblade was an innovation because I think that was really hard to find. I don't think that was even supposed to be there. I think there are...
Yeah, and referencing Pro Tour Gatecrash, Aristocrats, that's innovation.
Yeah,
because
that's it.
Playing Lingering Souls next to Blasphemous Act, that should not work. Why would I wrath my Lingering Souls away? That just doesn't make sense. And that's something I don't... Are we going to see really that much anymore? I mean, do we like this new direction that the Pro Tour is going to be going? I mean...
I think we will. I think some things might have to be adjusted. As I said, I think this is a really bad example to take because of how easy the metagame was. Like, it wasn't like Magic Online took weeks to sort this out either. Magic Online found this out in less than a week. I was playing Zombie immediately when Zombies was on the SCG Tour. I played a little bit of Zombies before that. The second it was on the SCG Tour, I played against four different types and people found it out in 2 days because information is shared. So I don't think it is. I think even if Magic Online only had a week, this metagame would have been found out. I do agree that there's less innovation, but as I was saying, I think they're calling what is innovation a stretch. So I think there's just average people finding out a metagame, and some metagames can't be solved further than that. If Magic Online wasn't a thing, I think the metagame would have been nearly the exact same for this Pro Tour, at least. I do think we could get other metagames that are a bit more dangerous. That's when a broken deck is found really fast. So Marvel, I think, is a bit broken, but was already known. But the next time, it takes like 2 weeks, the metagame's kind of stale on Magic Online. And then all of a sudden, for the third or fourth week, which we wouldn't have got before, oh, what's this? Someone 5-0'd like four times in a row with this absolutely busted deck. And that's going to dominate the Pro Tour. That's when we have a problem. Wizards could go about fixing that. They can move up the Pro Tour. They're going to try that.
Or they... I thought we were going to go with this was they could also ban the card, because now they say that we have the data now to do whatever we want.
Yeah, they can just do it whenever. They might be banning cards right now as we talk. No, but...
Is it Rata or Rata?
Arata.
Arata. It costs six to put out. Boom.
Arata, every time you play the card, we take one of your fingers. So you can play the card... But it's going to cost you... No.
It's a new uncard.
I do think there's a danger there. And information overload, as much as we hate censorship for this kind of stuff, because we want the information, information overload and the hive mind could make the game stale faster. They can combat that. They can move up the Pro Tour. They're already testing moving up worlds, like, right next to release. It's, like, 2 weeks after release, so Magic Online can't figure out the format that fast. So they could experiment with stuff like that. But until I see solid proof that it isn't just hundreds of people, like, millions of people play this game now and decks are more obvious to play, I don't think it's Magic Online's exact fault. The draft format, though, I think is very interesting to talk about on a Magic Online basis, because I think someone said it back when you had 15 to 20 drafts done by the time you did the Pro Tour, you were in the top 5%. I think LSV said it, you were in the top 5%, 10% of players in the room. Now that's a minimum. You are in the bottom 5%. There's people with over 100 drafts under their belt by the time the Pro Tour comes around. And I think that is really interesting for limited rounds.
Yeah, I mean, the limited rounds don't get that interesting, but I I see what your point is. I think on the standard side of things, it's really interesting to me how WotC has, in recent memory, been very concerned about, and I don't want to say this because I don't want to deter them away from making this change, which I think is a great change, but very concerned about the metagame being solved very early. And clearly, Magic Online is a tool that makes that happen quickly, or more quickly than it otherwise would. I think it also just kind of underscores that they are not designing the sets well enough, you know, to have those sort of synergies that aren't immediately obvious, that would take some play and some actual innovation to discover, or, you know, having the obvious decks be good and then there be some other deck that's kind of hidden underneath that can kind of come in. Basically, something that doesn't make the metagame very stale, which is what we've had, it feels like, for the last several standards. It's not felt fun at all. I mean, it's one of the reasons I've kind of stopped being interested in playing is like, I don't like playing, you know, the top deck or the top two decks. I like playing, you know, I like it when there's a solid tier two in a metagame. So, you know, having said that, I think it's great that Magic Online had it available sooner. I suspect that the general consensus that they will reach is that it was very, very good for them. That probably relates more to the draft, as Dave had just started getting into, than it does for the standard side of things, because, you know, as I mentioned, it kind of highlights the problems that they are having developing new sets with standard and keeping it interesting and having it not be that interesting very long. if this is the way the metagame kind of shakes out, maybe there's a deck that comes in that kind of beats Marvel and kind of makes it a trio. But, you know, if that doesn't happen, it's a very boring couple of weeks until a new set comes in and there's more stuff to try out. And when they only push standard as far as money for their company goes, that is not good for them. I saw a lot of the pros talking about how this takes away the edge of these super teams, and I could not be happier that that is the case, because I hate the idea of super teams basically being able to throw time, and in some cases money, at a problem and be that much more advantaged because you can afford, quote unquote, afford to spend that time on it. Whereas, you know, we all know how little one makes as a grinder Magic Online, and so I think it really puts everybody at a huge disadvantage. But I think that giving players the opportunity to kind of just jam a bunch of drafts and be, as you know, have as much practice or more practice than these super teams have, I think is great for the Pro Tour.
And Nathaniel, to combat that complaint, not your complaint, but that complaint from pros too, I mean, look at this top eight.
Yeah.
A lot of big name pros on here. So it's kind of like that quote from Rounders. He's like, why do we see the same guys make the final table every single year? You know, like, you think they're the luckiest guys on earth? No, it's a skill game.
Yeah, so it is. You're totally right. But there is some variance, and you're right. It highlights the skill a little bit more. So, but that might take away some of what makes the Pro Tour special, right? Like, if you're coming,
that's why I asked the question originally, just because it's always been the charm of the Pro Tour, and it's just like,
right,
do we like this new direction going forward? Obviously, we don't know what the future kind of holds for us in here. It just isn't this a good thing for Magic? I mean, obviously, it's like Magic Online release times early as we have it now is like unanimously like awesome. We can't, like, I don't think we're either of us like are gonna say, nah, I haven't been a fan of it. So like, I think we all say it's great, right?
Yeah. Right, but it's great for Magic Online players, for sure. You know, whether it's great for paper players, I suppose, would be probably the only potential dissenting opinions.
It's interesting. It's going to create a bit of a different dynamic. I'd be lying if I said I didn't think it was going to change things a bit. I think they over-exaggerate how many times pro teams break the meta completely. It happens every now and again. Sometimes they predict the meta very well, but sometimes pros make top eights with decks that weren't... that aren't even good. We're talking about decks that are only good for Pro Tour weekends and then are never good beyond that right now.
Yeah, PV makes that point too. He's like, well, we got Ifro in the top eight, but I don't think our deck was good at all.
Yeah, and that happens all the time. These guys play is what gets them there 90% of the time. Yeah, when they have a dominant deck, when someone figures out how Eldrazi should be built, it's a lot less about play. You did all the work beforehand. But I remember John Finkel making a top eight with a deck that was bad, the green-black control deck that played the six mana sorcery that got all the cards back.
Seasons past.
They admitted had a bad Banned Company matchup. Banned Company was all over that Pro Tour. I have no idea how he top eighted that event.
Yeah, it might be that he's pretty good at Magic.
Yeah, exactly. It might be that he's pretty good at Magic.
I mean, he seems like a guy that can literally just pick up a deck and just play it,
yeah.
You know, extremely well. So it kind of depends on what you want to see at the Pro Tour, right? I mean, if you want to see the innovation in decks, then this moves you away from that, most likely. If you want to see skillful games and skillful play, then I think this is significantly better because, you know, you often don't see the pros playing against, you know, you don't see the best players playing in kind of a known field, a known game. It's like, it's almost like an unknown game. And then you hear pros talk about how, you know, this deck's kind of an unknown quantity. And I think even Paolo mentioned it in the video. You know, the deck is an unknown quantity and therefore players won't know how to play against it, at least in day one. And therefore that gives an advantage. But I don't think that's the type of advantage that is really interesting, at least not for me. I'm sure it is for some people. Not saying that the metagame has to be solved, per se, before the Pro Tour, but it brings up a very different dynamic in terms of how the pros need to playtest, and you know, they'll know how to sideboard, they'll know how to do this. But so it puts a lot of pressure on WotC to make better sets. Perhaps in the current environment is not good, but ultimately, like, putting the pressure on them to design sets that are resilient, that are interesting for standard for longer than 3 weeks, I think is hopefully a positive thing for the long term. But, you know, it really does change the type of person. But I mean, like, if you just think about like an esport, like, everything is not any innovation really per se. I mean, this might be wrong to some degree, but you know, everyone's playing the same game, right? There's patches and stuff that change what various characters will do, but it's watching them do stuff that is crazy, that is really, really skillful, that people enjoy watching. I think in sports, esports in general, it's the skill factor that people like, not the, oh well, you know, they spent the first month of this set, you know, locked up in a cabin in the woods, and they just have more reps in than everybody else. That's interesting to some degree, but I think not what ultimately makes sports and esports very, very popular.
Man, Nathaniel, you kind of fundamentally broke down why Magic just is not as fun to watch as other esports are.
Well, maybe we're moving there with this change. And maybe we're
Bringing it kind of full circle, different skill sets are going to be required at the Pro Tour if we do think it's having a big change. Metagaming is going to be a lot more important. So there's an argument for a new type of busted deck comes out. What used to come out of the Pro Tour if a deck was busted was brand new hotness. You know, people still have to get exactly the right build, but you know, the Claw Blades and stuff, or the Eldrazi bursting out of the Pro Tour, no one's seen it, it's surprising. Now what has to happen is the metagaming. And that couldn't really happen this time because nothing so far, maybe someone will discover it in the next couple of months, but nothing so far can beat both zombies, like an aggro deck like zombies, low to the ground aggro deck, and a Marvel deck. Nothing beats both of them, so you're just kind of choosing your poison, as it's been for the last little while with the kind of the two deck standards we've had. But maybe in the future, there's going to be two or three established decks online. If you get the correct lead on the meta, you think all the pros, or you think over 50% of the field is going to play this mid-range deck, maybe you can come out of left field with this kind of janky counter deck, and you know you're just going to have a high percentage against that deck, maybe sacrifice some other matchups. So there's going to be a bit more metagaming, a bit more like what happens, I think, on the SCG Tour. People like Tom Ross, Jerry Thompson have made a career out of it, bringing it again a bit full circle. This might just favor Jerry, players like Jerry, opposed to favoring players like Sam Black, who are very good at creating something. It's going to help someone that's very good at working within confined rules that Magic Online are going to help set up. So I don't think it's bad. I think it's just going to be different and reward different skill sets. And of course, all-time greats like PV himself are just going to adapt and not really care in a while. But it might, we might also not see the Cabin in the Woods kind of playtesting teams. It might not just be worth traveling to the country anymore to test in secret. You might as well test on Magic Online now, right? You just get more reps in.
Yeah, you'll have like a Magic Online dealer sponsor you, and then you get access to the cards, and you can test what you need to. And
hey, we know what that is. Dave, you really did bring us full circle. Read that article by Jerry. He pretty much talked about exactly what you talked about. You know, if you're interested in that sort of thing, he talks about Pro Tour, Avacyn Restored, exact same thing. They knew Naya was like the best deck, and he's like, well, can I play? Should I play Naya? You know, and this is, you know, this is before Magic Online, all the stuff too. So they know Naya was the deck, and that's actually the deck that Cho top forward with too. So, and he decided, how far do I want to next level myself and the metagame? And it's just like, it's this weird, interesting dance that you were talking about. And Magic Online kind of brings a new twist into this puzzle that will be going forward. And I'm interested to see where it goes, and especially we'll see where the trial run goes for the World Championships in the fall. All right, well, to close us out on this episode, I thought we kind of relive the past a little bit. There was a video done by Athena that was, it went over everybody's biggest punts. When I say everybody, there was LSV, Newmont, and other players that they went over their biggest punts. And we've kind of shared one or two stories like this on the cast before. Dave, I think you're sharing the same story that we discussed on the cast from your PTQ. So maybe I might have to ask you to say a different story.
I got
but
so many.
Dave is full of punts. Yeah. He's got so many Dragon's Maze punts.
Yeah, so let's each go over our biggest punts that kind of really get into us, you know, bring it back to Rounders. You always remember the times you lose, but you never really, you can never recall the times that you're on top and you win. We can all speak in great detail of our biggest punts here, or at least I think so. At least I can. One of you guys can go first.
I'll go first because it's quick, because I don't have great detail. I have no idea what the cards I was playing were. I don't remember what tournament it was. I remember it was a high stakes tournament, at least for me. So it was either like a PTQ or a Grand Prix. It was in paper, which I don't frequently play. I had the win in my hand. I knew I had the win in my hand, so I had to play two spells that turn. I played the first spell and then went to play my second spell and realized I tapped my mana incorrectly and could no longer play the other spell that would win me the game. And then I lost the next turn, and it felt really, 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 really bad. That moment when you realize what you've done. And then, I mean, I didn't say anything. I just passed the turn. I didn't want to be like, ugh, I just screwed that up and I should have won. I just said, all right, well, I have nothing. It's your go. You win. That was mine. Quick and easy.
Oh, I got so many. So a real recent one was I was about to win a PPDQ finals. Had the game pretty locked up with Naya, Marvel, back when Emrakul was legal.
Those are fun times. Yeah.
It was back when it was just Mardu and Naya were basically the entire metagame. Blue-White was a little bit of it, but this is when it was dwindling. I was playing against Mardu vehicles. I had the game pretty under control. My opponent has a really big board, but I have an Ishkana they can't attack by. I spin the wheel. I hit a Kozilek's Return, which I play to wipe out all my own spiders, all my opponent's blockers. I have another Ishkana in hand, so I attack my opponent's Gideon, put it down to one, and play my Ishkana. I don't have enough to Marvel again. I'm like one or two short. I'm like too short of Marveling again. And I put my hand on my spider tokens, and I'm thinking about how I'm going to block next turn. And then I get to spin again. I've spun a couple times, so it's very unlikely I don't start hitting Emrakuls and like getting back my returns for the win. And I just have my hand on the spider tokens, thinking how the next turn is going to block, how I'm fine, how I can get the most advantageous blocks. And I just say, pass the turn, without picking up the spider tokens still resting on my hands. So my opponent looks at the board, gets back a Scrap Heap Scrounger, unlicensed disintegrations my spider, attacks. I'm like, okay, I'll go to blocks. Notice I haven't put the spiders in play. I only have a servant to block. Block with my servant, go down to like two and lose to a disintegration next turn. All while my hands are like next to my spiders. I'm literally scanning the board going, where did I put my spider? And there was still my hand off to the left on my spider tokens, not in play. I'm like, oh my god, what have I done? This is the worst.
Paper magic.
Yeah, paper magic indeed. I had been playing online a lot. But I guess that's more of a brain fart than an out-and-out punt I did a couple of really bad ones at the World Magic Cup. I'd got sick the morning before. I had some issues. I had to show up late to the limited portion. But in the constructed portion, I had got very little sleep. A dredge opponent had got back, I think it was a Dark Blast. They had got back a Dark Blast previously in the game. But in my head, I thought they had got back a Golgari Grave Troll. So the game is coming to the end, and I'm running on fumes at this stage. I have to make a line where I attack and I leave back basically a 1-1 blocker. And I go to make the play. I stack a bunch of stuff to Ravager, leave back a 1-1 blocker, put my opponent to dead in two turns essentially. And my teammate is like, no, but I can barely, it's this kind of focused, I can barely hear him trying to stay awake thing. And the last card in hand, which I think is a Grave Troll, ends up just being a Dark Blast. He Dark Blasts my blocker and attacks. I'm like, wow, I guess I'm just dead. And scoop him up. I think it would have been very hard to win that game anyway, knowing that it's a Dark Blast. But this is, I saw him dredge it back, completely forgotten, has assumed he had multiple Grave Trolls in hand.
And there's that team element, so it's just kind of extra humiliating.
Yeah, my teammate tried to warn me, but as I said, I was so out of it. I was so, like, 2 hours sleep, can't focus. I barely noticed he was saying anything, so that was a really bad one.
Well, I'll jump in if you want to. You can end us with another one if you want, but I'll just say mine real quick.
I had another one to think about, but go ahead.
Sure. So mine was my first Grand Prix. It was, I think we called it GP Christmas. So it was GP Indianapolis. It was 2013 or 2012. I can't remember. It was Return to Ravnica Sealed. I was X1. I think I was like 3 or 4 and 1. So I'm like, I'm doing pretty good. My first Grand Prix. My deck's like decent. I'm obs on colors. And my deck's got a V2 Gatsby Guildmage. I'm like, all right, I got this like mythic uncommon. I'm feeling decent. So I am doing pretty good against this opponent. I play an Armada Worm, which is a mythic rare that I had not yet played on. And I actually did a lot of testing for this format too. But, you know, some mythic rares you just don't get a chance to test. Although it's pretty easy to understand. 6 mana, you get 2 5/5s. I'm like, all right, there's no way I can lose this attack. I just have to alpha. I have 1 blocker. It's the 1/4 defender with reach. I can't remember the name of the card, but I have a pretty well-established board. I go out full-out attack. I also have a combat trick in my hand. So I'm like, oh, if anything goes awry, I can just use this combat trick. So I'm expecting my opponent to make like double blocks, you know, kind of kill the Immortal Worm or something like that. And my opponent makes blocks that like don't make sense to me, that like I was just confused by. So like, they makes like terrible trump blocks everywhere. My opponent just doesn't have any cards in hand too, so I'm like, well, and my opponent asks like, go to damage. I was like, sure. And then as soon as like my opponent picked up the cards, I was like, oh wait, like, oh no. And I totally forgot that the Armada Worm token had trample. The way my opponent blocked, they went to 1. So all I had to do was use the common bond on the token. Would have won the game. And so as soon as my opponent draws the card, I was like, oh no, don't tell me you're going to top deck. And then it was a removal spell for my reach blocker. Attacks with the flyer, kills me. Oh man, that one felt terrible. My wife was watching too. That was the other thing. Like, when people are watching you and you make a really bad mistake, and she didn't know how bad the mistake I made either. She's like, oh, what's wrong? I was like, you have no idea how badly I just played right there. And my opponent didn't know I had the common bond in the hand either. I did not give him the satisfaction of showing how stupid I was. That one burns still to this day.
I'll tell a story. There was another punt I had in mind, but I cannot remember it. There was another really bad one. So instead, it's a little bit of a bad beat story. And it's the opposite. We all lost to these punts we made. I want to show people that sometimes you're going to punt and it doesn't matter. You got to keep playing. I'm playing standard GP. I'm playing blue-black control in Innistrad era. And it was like early. It was before Delver start dominating. It was when zombies and stuff was around. My deck wasn't that well advised for the tournament, but I liked it anyway. And I beat my two worst matchups in the first 2 rounds, or 3 rounds even. It's like mono-red 3 times I beat it. The matchup's unwinnable. I get really lucky in all 3 of them. And then I come against black-white tokens, which was a really good matchup. It had the old Sauron, the old 4-drop Sauron, Midnight Haunting, had a bunch of Anthem effects. But in general, I had Curse of Death's Hold and Ratchet Bombs, and the matchup was fine.
Man, Curse of Death's Hold, that's like a top 5 card for me.
Such a cool card. So the situation is, my opponent has a Sauron in play, my opponent has 2 Intangible Virtues in play, 2 tokens, and a Sauron emblem. I have a Ratchet Bomb on 2, and a Curse of Death's Hold in play, negating one of the essentially Anthems. And what I should do is, I'm holding up a counter spell, or I'm holding up a removal spell or something, and the whole line I have to do... Oh, sorry, no, I had tapped out that turn. Apologies, I tapped out that turn for Curse. And the whole line I have to make is, I cannot crack Ratchet Bomb to the end of his turn. I cannot do this because if I crack Ratchet Bomb, I kill all of his enchantments because it's on two, and then all his tokens die to my Curse of Death's Hold. He can only play an Anthem and then play a bunch of tokens. Then I die. I don't have another sweeper. Curse was kind of the sweeper of that deck. So my opponent, in his turn, goes Lingering Souls. I'm like, huh? Okay. Like, he knows I have Ratchet Bomb. Why is he playing into this? Why doesn't he wait till end of turn and try and set up another Anthem? This is weird. Okay, resolves. He thinks for a long time. He goes in the tank for a long time. I'm like, okay, I'm sorry, you're going to have to make a play. He's like, okay, minus Sarin again to kill it and give me another emblem. Ooh, okay, that's... Man, he's going for this hard. Okay, I know. My opponent is an excellent player. He's trying to bait me into using the Ratchet Bomb. He's then going to slam an Anthem and flash back to Lingering Souls. I'm not an idiot. And I'm just staring at the board and he attacks and I make an idiotic play. I crack the Ratchet Bomb. Like, it's too much. I can't. I have to crack the Ratchet Bomb. I'm taking too much damage. So I crack it. It's on two. He looks at the board and he goes, okay. And he just stares at me. I'm like, so that ability resolves. He's like, yeah, all your enchantments die. He's like, okay. And he puts them in the graveyard. And he looks at me again, just staring at me. I'm like, and I just point at the Curse of Death's Hold. And he's like, oh no. And he picks up all his tokens and just puts them away. I'm like, oh, so he didn't notice the Curse of Death's Hold, I guess. But now I'm in trouble. I wasn't disciplined. He's going to slam an Anthem and I'm going to lose. And he stares at me again. I have to ask him to make his play. He's taking a very long time. And he goes, flashback Lingering Souls. And I say, okay. He puts both Lingering Souls tokens into play. I pick them up and place them aside. And he looks at me weird. I'm like, can I point at the Curse of Death's Hold again? He's like, oh no! The curse!
Oh man, double.
He beats me 2-0. Not close. Absolutely destroys me 2-0. So I that's my like worst bad beat story. Along with, just persist. If you make a mistake, whatever. Egg on your face. Go on and dominate the game anyway.
It's pretty savage, Dave.
It's a pretty savage story. He was very emotive. Maybe I can't get it across on this platform, but there was a lot of hand-waving when the spirits went and face-grabbing. He was very funny. It's very funny looking back now. Young Dave was not amused. Was not amused by the shenanigans.
Yeah, my favorite is just pointing at the curse. Sir. Oh man, good stuff. All right, well, I think that's going to do it for this episode. So remember, for upcoming events on Magic Online this week, we have the Throwback Standard Gauntlet starts this week. That's Combo Winter. Also, the Team Draft Super League will be underway. Also, don't forget the new challenges for Eternal formats also start this weekend as well. But if you want premier events, there's a standard Mox playoff on Saturday the 20th and a sealed PTQ on Sunday. If you want to contact the show, cardorderpodcast@gmail.com. You can hit me personally on Twitter @ConnorPO'Donnell. If you want to watch me play Legacy, not Standard, I tried Mono Black Zombies. I don't think I'll be doing that again. My Twitch is Connor_OD. Where can our listeners contact both of you guys?
Well, I stream on Twitch 4 to 5 days a week. Dave C on Twitch, SEA. At the moment, still testing a bit of Modern for Copenhagen. But I got the Mox playoff this weekend, which I will probably stream and probably play some kind of Marvel variant for. You can hit me up on Twitter at Dave C, SEA again, 89.
And for me, Twitter @CardHoarder, typically me replying. And if you would like to have a lengthier discussion, Nathaniel@CardHoarder.com, shoot me an email and I'll get back to you when I can.
Of course, you can find us every week on CardHoarder.com. So everybody, thank you for listening and we will see you next week.